This is HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. The scene was 2012 in Leroy, a small town of 7,500 people in western New York, where the kids were wholesome and happy. At least that's how it appeared, until 18 teenage girls developed a strange neurological syndrome of twitching and tics. Some attributed it to an environmental hazard in the area, but the physicians consulted agreed that it was more likely a conversion disorder, a mass psychogenic illness. We'll hear with more on this is Dr. George Starr, Emeritus Clinical Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Starr. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, and thank you.
This is a fascinating, fascinating case. I mean, reading about this, I was just riveted to this entire story, how this all happened, and we're going to get into more of the details of that. But first, help me understand, or help us understand and define what we mean when we use these terms, conversion reaction, conversion disorder, or even hysteria in children. What does it mean?
Usually means the presentation of what looks like a real illness, but it's based on psychological factors, usually stress, anxiety. Some people consider it a form of body language with children who are unable to discuss their anxiety, and it comes out as difficulty walking, difficulty seeing, difficulty hearing.
So it's seen, it's something that is in the literature, and in you and your own experience and practice, have you seen these kinds of illnesses?
I've seen several cases that I've recognized and were able to help and resolve. Once we recognize them
and
for what
runs,
they were.
It runs the gamut in terms of the kinds of ways it expresses itself.
Difficulty seeing, difficulty hearing, difficulty breathing, numbness in an extremity, difficulty walking, or even the apparent seizures.
So but to the individual child, in this case, these were teenagers, but even in a child, these are real. I mean, the tics and vocalizations that were akin to like a Tourette's syndrome in these young girls were real. They weren't truly malingering.
They weren't faking, no. And that's part of what makes this difficult to assess sometimes. But usually there are some things that, if you're thinking about it, will help you understand that this is not a true medical presentation. It's more of a psychological presentation.
So there are some things that there are features of their symptoms that were not exactly in line with what you would have thought of if it were truly a neurological disease.
That's correct. One of them is a failure of response to medical treatment for that disorder. And one of the girls in Leroy, for example, was on up to 11 medicines at one point without any abatement in her symptoms.
So that's almost a telltale sign in and of itself.
It really suggests that you need to be looking for something else. Yeah.
So how is the diagnosis made? I mean, is it a diagnosis of exclusion? In other words, you have to run a certain amount of tests and figure out what it's not?
That's probably a reasonable approach, although a lot of people recommend that if you recognize that these symptoms are not typical of the disease as it normally presents, that you think about a positive diagnosis, consider this as a first-line diagnosis. But you also need to make sure that their other illness is not present. And so when I saw some of these kids, I would hospitalize them and ask for consultations by gastroenterology, by neurology, by ear, nose, and throat people, and also by psychiatry or psychology.
So you would attempt to rule out the more physiologically based causes.
That's correct.
And in order to determine what actually
and also
happening.
Prove that this was not a true medical illness, but an anxiety-based illness.
But in the case of Leroy, this was happening on such a large scale basis that it strikes me that it's almost like a mass psychosis or a mass hysteria. Is that common, or it seemed very unusual to me as a layperson?
Yeah, the duration that it went on was somewhat uncommon. And that was possibly because a physician out of the area somehow became involved and suggested a possible cause for all of this that really had no basis in fact, but was believable by
the children and the parents, and fed
into it and probably maintained it until other physicians became involved and began to help these children.
So do we really understand, though, what causes this? In other words, I mean, it just seems that it's not conscious on the part of a child, clearly, or even on the part of these teenagers. There's obviously some factors in their life that is causing stress, but all of us experience some levels of stress.
Right.
I mean, were there... Well, we can talk about Leroy in particular in a minute, but in talking about some of the other cases you've seen, do we understand how this all gets going?
Sometimes explanations are available. For example, I saw a boy who apparently suddenly lost major hearing in one ear and had a parent who had had a tumor in the same ear several years earlier. The concern was that this child had a similar tumor in his ear, but on examination, he really did not have a hearing loss, even though the school nurse thought he did. But when he had a second audiological examination, his hearing was normal. Another girl lost sight in one eye, but turned out to have a cousin who was wearing a patch for a true eye problem, a crossed eye. And so schoolgirl amblyopia is not uncommon. And the eye doctors will tell you that they sometimes have to put some children into plain glass eyeglasses just to help them see better. They'll tell you they can't see, but you give them plain glass, no correction at all, and all of a sudden they can see better once they're wearing these glasses.
So in a sense, you're playing a game.
Sometimes you will. It depends on the severity of the presentation.
But you had some theory about this altered psychological state that these individuals are in during this time that is not as uncommon as we tend to think it is. Tell us about that.
Hysteria is a form of trance state, of what we consider an altered state of consciousness. And although we think that's often a very exotic state achieved only with great difficulty by specially trained people, actually that's not so. It can be as everyday and mundane as driving down a familiar road and not remembering the last couple of miles that you drove because you were thinking of something else. It's often thought that things that we can do well, we can do automatically, but it's the problems in our lives that occupy our minds and thoughts, and sometimes we'll end up in a concentrated focus on them with a disregard for what's going on around us.
And that's a trance.
But how does
that become converted perhaps into some kind of a physiological or what appears to be a physiological state?
In that situation, the thought is that somehow this problem, such as difficulty seeing, difficulty hearing, numbness in a hand, for example, serves another purpose. Difficulty walking gives you a reason for not being able to go on with your life in whatever way, possibly because of stress that makes you uncomfortable with what's going on.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with pediatrician Dr. George Starr, and we're talking about conversion reactions in children. So why is the diagnosis so challenging?
Because the physicians are basically usually trained to think of disease processes, and for whatever reason, our training really does not address these issues very much. I became interested in it and studied it, and I try to give talks to pediatricians and doctors about this to raise the level of awareness.
Is there also the notion of stigma attached to anything that's kind of mental?
Absolutely. And so one of the approaches to that is to think of this as a form of stress reaction and to present that in a way that's similar to, say, for example, migraines. That makes it easier, I think, for parents and for patients to accept and understand this unusual illness.
So let's get back to Leroy, because it's, to me, a recent case, and obviously, though we think of this as an ancient type of disease, these kind of hysterical reactions. I think of the Salem witch trial with all those young girls claiming, that they were fainting and they were infected by spirits. And this scene almost has that same feel because there were young teenage girls, and it started with a few, and then it seemed to have grown. What do you think actually happened there, or what does the data suggest?
The epidemiology suggests that these were girls from, many of them from broken homes, fractured families, Several of them were cheerleaders, and cheerleaders as a group have a history of mimicking each other's illnesses.
Really? That's an interesting fact. Yeah.
And so that many of the episodes of what are considered mass hysteria or mass psychogenic illness, there's often a history of cheerleaders being involved.
Really?
But not always. One of my favorite stories actually is about a lunchroom in Atlanta, where a middle school lunchroom where a 12-year-old girl was eating her lunch and then threw up, and a lunchroom aide suggested that maybe it was the tuna fish sandwich, whereupon 60 more kids began throwing up immediately.
Goodness.
Many of them ending up in local hospitals, some of them staying overnight for IV hydration. This being Atlanta, the CDC became involved and checked everything out. There was nothing wrong with the tuna fish. This was all suggestion.
That's fascinating. But that was a short... This is what's interesting to me in this versus the Leroy story is that had a short-term outcome or a short-term resolution.
Correct.
But the Leroy story went on, and you had posited that perhaps there was something else feeding it.
As I was mentioning before, a physician, a pediatric neurologist somewhere in New Jersey somehow got involved with this, suggested a possible autoimmune disorder with a fancy name called PANDAS. It's a neurologic disorder associated with strep infections. And the person who actually originally proposed this disorder, Dr. Susan Sweeto at the NIMH, also got involved and looked at this and said these things, this illness does not occur in clusters as it's being proposed. This does not make any sense.
But the fact was, you can understand why a lot of people were looking for other explanations, whether they were environmental hazards or the parent, I think most
anything except the stress and anxiety that was present.
I think it's hard for...
Form of denial.
Yes, yeah. It would be very hard because of the stigma and everything else to assume that some of these very frank, what looked like neurological symptoms. I mean, I understood one girl was grunting and having almost like seizure-like movements.
Correct,
could be psychologically driven. I mean, you can understand why that is a hard thing to accept.
Absolutely. And so everybody wants to look for a medical basis, but there are often tip-offs. If you're familiar with the normal presentation of some of these illnesses, such as seizures, you can actually often discriminate between what we call pseudo-seizures and true seizures.
So what was the treatment that worked, or what is the best treatment that's agreed upon?
Another pediatric neurologist in Buffalo became involved and offered these girls continued medical testing, which all came up normal, offered them emotional counseling, psychological counseling, and in particular one called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a form of using your intellectual mind, your intelligent mind.
Your rational mind.
Rational mind with your emotional feelings, yeah. And another thing that she did was to place this in the context of a stress reaction, similar to the kinds of things that happen with a migraine headache, the stress bringing on a migraine headache. And this presentation was acceptable.
So basically what happened? I mean, what was the end of the story?
End of the story is that the majority of the girls have cleared up and gotten better. I don't have any further follow-up in the last year, but to the best of my knowledge, it has been resolved.
So what's the takeaway then from this whole story and even in your experience as a pediatrician? Should we be aware of, obviously, the potential for these kinds of things and be able to address them appropriately?
The take-home is that when a child is indicating they're having a problem, we need to look at whether this really looks like a true medical situation or whether it may have psychological overtones that are stress-related and try to discriminate between the two.
And perhaps and fight through that initial inertia with the stigma attached and go forward and deal with it.
What I found is that when I talk with parents and call this a stress reaction rather than hysteria or a psychological issue, a stress reaction is much better understood, and then we can move forward, deal with the stress, identify the anxiety, help the child with their issues, and hopefully bring them back to a better state of health.
My guest has been Dr. George Starr, Emeritus Clinical Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much for coming in with this very fascinating story. It really is a lot of pause for thought and very enlightening for us.
Thank you for the invitation.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to HealthLink on Air.